power to make sure he wins?
Rick considered the question as they sat down. I hope that last part won't happen. I met Mike's father very briefly when I gave the core back, and he seemed a bit irritated at his son. Though this challenge must have gotten his support for it to happen at all, I don't know if he's fully invested in it. I hope not, because if he does go all in, then I don't have a chance.
But even so, that's a really huge gap in Lucrum.
It is, yeah. But fighting him one-on-one in a formal challenge is better than him ambushing me at any time with his friends helping. The smart thing to do would be to let him beat me until he's satisfied. If I focused on defense until then, I could probably avoid permanent injury. Rick took a deep breath, forcibly relaxing his fists. But I want to win. Melissa hugged him tightly.
I don't know what the right thing to do is. Your life is the most important, so I don't want you to risk yourself at all. I hate the idea of people like him being able to just walk over us, so I'd love to see you beat the shit out of him.
Language, language. She stuck out her tongue at him.
So it becomes wholesome to wish terrible violence on somebody if I say beat the poopy out of him?
Yeah, that's very wholesome. The absurdity of it made him finally smile, which let most of the tension ease from him. It didn't improve the facts of the situation, but he couldn't face those facts if he was still wrapped up in emotions. Let's go get this door fixed before too many bugs come in. I'll try to come up with a plan while we work on it. The mundane activity gave him something to do with his hands and took his mind off his new problem, for at least a little while. Time was precious, but rushing into things would accomplish nothing. He needed to remain calm and use the days he had efficiently. Currently, he had about a month before the multi-tier match, then 2 weeks after that before the challenge. Focusing on them one at a time was simply not an option, which meant he'd need to split his attention. Life would be easier if he could devote himself entirely to a series of individual goals, but that wasn't how life worked. He should count himself lucky if he didn't run into several brand new problems before the challenge fight. But how was he going to fight someone with as much power as Mike? There was no magical solution that would transform him, and no medicine that could grant him that much power. He could make progress in his remaining time, but he couldn't depend on that. Once they had the door roughly repaired and made calls about getting a replacement, Rick pulled up his profile to consider his options. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier, 17th. Ether score, 229. Lucrum generation, 27,650. Effective rate, 21,636. Current Lucrum, 2,408. Rick Hunter's Lucrum portfolio. Foundation, 3,050, level 4. Offensive Lucor, 4,700, level 3. Defensive Lucor, 8,400, level 6. Bunyan's Step, 3,950, level 2. Graham's Stake, 5,500, level 2. Aura Leech, negative 3,554, stage 2. Aura Leech, negative 2,460, stage 1. Tracking Bond, 100, level 13. Gross Lucrum, 27,650. Net Lucrum, 21,636. For a moment, the sheer size of the Lucrum gap depressed him, but he pushed past that by remembering what Emily had said. What mattered was how much of their power they had invested and how well they had invested it. He did have useful assets to bring to the fight, and he could strengthen them, particularly if he focused on combat cores instead of Graham's Stake. Mike was certainly going to enter the match fully charged. Thanks to extra money from the fights, Rick could afford enough Philosopher's Elixir and Serum to do the same. Endurance would be key because his only chance was to make his opponent exhaust himself. If so, he needed to get rid of the Aura Leeches. Rick seriously considered whether or not that was a good idea because it would lead to more Lucrema damage and might have lower returns than focusing on combat. Yet he knew there were drugs to deal with that, and Granny Whitney might even give him some before the tournament, so he would have to take the chance. Getting the leeches out of him would greatly improve his stamina. He had one major advantage. He was very familiar with fighting opponents more powerful than him. His opponent was doing this for the sake of his ego, while Rick was doing it to survive. That was an edge that Mike could never purchase. Yet that might not be enough. Rick moved from thinking about what was reasonable to what was possible, no matter how desperate. Chapter 40. Planning Recovery. After several days training his fundamentals, Rick had advanced as much as he thought he could for now. Fortunately, he'd also developed a plan that might give him the edge he needed against Mike. The difficulty would be surviving his plan. The first step involved checking what resources he already had. He had scheduled a sparring match with Lisa for that day, so he headed out to meet her at the park. Doing some research online suggested that high-end lucre massages could do a little healing work, and they definitely helped with recovery, but he didn't want to depend on the impossible.
"Hey, Rick,"
Lisa greeted him with her usual smile.
"You ready to spar?"
"More than ready. I need to update you on some things, but let's do it while we're recovering." They started sparring in their usual location, though this time Rick didn't hold back. He was interested to see that Lisa responded easily, pulling out a technique he'd never seen before. Every time he made contact with her aura, he felt slightly numb. Though he could push through the numbness, by the end of their match, his entire body tingled as if it had fallen asleep. "That's new." He shook his hands, trying to get sensation back into them. "At a higher intensity, that could be disabling, maybe even lethal."
"Actually, it's not new. And I didn't mean it to be dangerous. You were just taking it really seriously, so I reacted automatically."
As they sat down, she glanced over at him in concern.
"Are you all right? Usually you don't let your emotions get to you."
"Well, that's a bit of a story." He told her about the upcoming fight against Mike briefly. Though he'd intended to skip anything related to Melissa, somehow he ended up telling Lisa about that as well. It didn't matter, since she'd probably learn by implication the next time she gave his sister a massage. When he was finished, Lisa shook her head.
"That's awful. I wish... well, there's no point saying it, but I wish we lived in a world where things were fair. If everybody had equal amounts of lucrum somehow, or aura didn't exist..."
"I don't think it would change anything." Rick slowly rubbed his eyes. "Some people would still find a way to gain an advantage and then lord it over others. If it wasn't lucrum, it'd just be money or something else."
"Yeah, but I imagine the fact that the powerful can become immortal and blow up mountains doesn't help."
"That's fair."
"So why did you tell me all this?"
Lisa put a hand on his shoulder.
"If there's anything I can do, I'm happy to help. It's just, there's no way I can fight, if that's what you were asking. I might be an okay fighter thanks to you, but I don't think I have it in me to be in a serious fight."
Rick quickly shook his head to ward off that suggestion. "No, I wouldn't ask you to do that. But since I'm going to get heavily injured during this, I wanted to ask you about your limits when it comes to healing. I know massage therapy isn't meant for that, but I had to ask."
"I'm better with internal problems than anything external."
Lisa shifted away, tugging a few blades of grass out of the ground and slowly tearing them apart.
"I mean, nobody can massage a wound back together. Most of what I do isn't exactly repairing damage so much as helping the body function better. But when it comes to damage to your lucrima, I can help with that. So if you have a broken leg, you want a hospital or a healer. But if you're trying to regain strength in the leg you broke, maybe I can help."
How long would it take to do the majority of the recovery? I know it's a long road to get back to 100%, but what about being fighting ready?"
"The most extensive course of therapy I offer is 2 4-hour sessions in one day. That's what I do for professional fighters who need to get back on their feet as quickly as possible."
Rick nodded. "Good. I don't know if our sparring is worth enough for that, but I think I'm going to need it. Hopefully you'll give me an advance."
"Sure, but..."
Lisa tossed her pieces of grass aside and focused fully on him, her face filled with concern.
"I hope you're not doing anything too crazy, Rick. The way you're talking about this makes me think you're going to get yourself almost killed."
"Yes, most likely. But since I don't have a choice, I'm doing my best to prepare for it." She shook her head slowly.
"I know they threatened your sister, but surely there's another way. I'm not saying that I have an alternative, and I'm not judging your decisions, just... do you really think Mike is going to beat you that badly?"
"I don't intend to give him a chance." Rick sighed and got to his feet, forcing himself to smile again. "Thanks for sparring, Lisa."
"Aren't I supposed to be thanking you? I mean, I will, if you need the recovery.
If you still have time before you need to go, I actually wanted to ask you several other questions.
Yeah, sure.
Lisa got up and walked along beside him, guiding them toward the walking path that circled around East Park.
What's up?
One of the most obvious components of recovery is medicine, but trying to research about it, I feel, well, dumb, to be honest. There are so many different sources online, and I don't know enough to be sure which ones are accurate. Practically any herbal supplement or mystic herb site starts setting off bullshit alarms for me, so I can't judge between them. To his surprise, Lisa laughed oddly.
Oh, you don't want to get me started on that. My mother is really into certain treatments and... Really, don't get me ranting.
I don't mind, it might be educational.
Well, if you say so. Not exactly sure where to start, though. You're looking for medicine that can bring you back from serious injuries, right?
And ideally help me grow stronger from them, yeah. Rick shrugged. I realize that's asking a lot, hence why I kept finding suspicious-looking products and sites.
That's not asking the impossible, though. Some of my clients look for general health advice, or at least talk a lot about it, so I think I can give you some good suggestions. But I'm not an alchemist or a doctor, so you should take everything I say with a grain of salt.
No, you know a lot more than me. Even just simple things. I see arguments about natural herbs versus synthetic versions, and I just don't know who's right. Are the synthetic versions really inferior to the traditionally grown plants, or is that just being stubborn in the face of progress?
It's both.
Lisa smiled and began explaining, gesturing expressively while she spoke, though he couldn't derive any meaning from her gestures.
It depends on the plant, so you have to follow the research. In a lot of cases, the synthetic versions are just as good as the traditional versions, just cheaper. You're right about those. People just like paying more to think they're getting a better product. But in some cases, the best synthetic attempts don't do as well in head-to-head tests, so the original plant has some emergent property they haven't duplicated in the lab yet.
Then I'm going to have to rely on you.
Don't worry, I waste a lot of time reading up on these things. Well, I guess not wasting. Anyway, there are actually some cases where the synthetic version isolates the active ingredient from the original and is thus much more effective, though that means it's also more expensive. So sometimes a premium price is just for suckers, but sometimes it's because of a superior product. Fun fact, the most successful synthetic was so massively successful that the natural-only crowd can't compete and people don't even think about it. Serum. Go back thousands of years and only kings and queens drank it, and even a few centuries ago, it was valuable. But now you can buy it in a six-pack from the store, and even the cheap stuff is more potent than the serum kings and queens got. Isn't technology amazing?
It was interesting to hear her speak about a subject with such passion, so Rick found himself smiling as he listened to her. Though it wasn't relevant to what he needed, he decided he might as well ease another curiosity. What about all the family-exclusive or hidden sect formulas? Is there anything to them?
Those are really a mixed bag.
Lisa gave a formless shrug.
There are some groups that have incredibly powerful formulations, without question. Some are actually state secrets. But the world is just chock full of special families and combat sects, and all of them wanted to pretend they had hidden knowledge.
So some of them are worthless.
Absolutely. There have been a few clinical trials that went really poorly, the powerful secret medicine not doing much better than the commonly available alternatives. A few did even worse than placebos. Or there was one that only did as well as common medicine because it was literally just a mix of aspirin and serum. Apparently, they'd made the creation process so opaque, even their alchemists didn't know that's all it was.
Rick chuckled, for the first time seeing how reading a bunch of scientific literature could be fun. I'm guessing they don't let people test their secret medicines very often, then.
You got it. But if you want a rule of thumb, be skeptical of hidden secrets. A few medicines are so powerful they're kept secrets, but for many, ask this question. If their medicine was so good, why don't they gain more power by just patenting and selling it?
Good point. Trying to keep all of this in mind, though, I feel like it's a bit overwhelming. It will be hard to make a good choice.
It might seem that way, but you can really sort through the options.
Still walking, Lisa pulled out her phone and began to navigate somewhere.
Here, let me show you a site where you can order most things at wholesale prices.
Wait, you can buy Lucrem medication online? Even as he said it, however, he felt dumb for assuming you couldn't. Why wouldn't the industry have modernized, given the profitability of their field?
Oh, the internet actually makes things way easier. It's a stereotype, but a lot of alchemists are introverts, if not full misanthropes. The people who are really crazy about developing their medicines are happy to support themselves via online sales and never have to interact with people.
She showed him a website, and he pulled it up on his phone. It looked like any other online store, simple to navigate and remarkably clear about the contents of each product. Now that he saw the name, he thought he'd seen a few people talking about getting their medicine from there, but he had assumed it was a secret location, not just a website. So, as Rick paged through lists of healing medications, he found himself overwhelmed by the choices. Is there any way to get a good deal? Because I need as much as I can get, but I don't have a lot of money to burn.
There actually is one easy win. Generic medication.
Lisa poked at his screen to navigate somewhere else.
When the patents run out, companies make way less money on a drug, but it's still perfectly good. Usually they find a different way to get the same effect and thus get new patents. They pretend the new drug is an improvement, but oftentimes it doesn't do any better in tests.
With Lisa's help, Rick found and identified several generic medications that provided rapid healing. They were still expensive, given their powerful effects, but nothing like he'd been expecting. Certainly nothing like what he'd expected could be shipped directly to his house. Buying generics meant that he had more money left over than he expected. Though it would mean lean times for the next month, he decided to spend everything except his emergency fund on one final medication, something that would help him grow from a near-death experience. After considering several different options, he found what he wanted. It had a long scientific name, but in ancient times it had been called Deathbane, and recently it was marketed as Life's Edge. Just buying a small package of one dose would cost an obscene amount, plus it required a more expensive shipping option so that it wouldn't be stolen or damaged in the mail. But the Lucrum numbers it gave looked promising. The user reviews were solid, and Lisa didn't have any objection to it. When he prepared to place the order, however, she looked at him in concern.
This is so... Again, I'm not telling you what you should do. Do you really think you're going to come that close to death, Rick?
That is the plan. He placed the order, trying not to think about how much money he had just spent. It would be worth it. Hopefully. Chapter 41. The Gifts of Family. All the medicine had arrived without incident, but the Deathbane had arrived with instructions. Not a few lines on the side of a bottle, but multiple pages in a glossy booklet. Reading over it, Rick discovered that it was half warnings and half suggestions for how to get the most out of such a medicine. Clearly, they understood their customers. The suggestions included a large number of different exercises that would prepare a person to benefit from their near-death experience. Some were too far on the mystical side for him to handle, dealing with abstract matters of Lucrama that most modern Lucrum users ignored. Though he logged the exercises away for future reference, there simply wasn't time to learn such difficult exercises. Many he had already mastered, however, so he repeated them a few times just to make sure he was fresh. That left a few that were within his ability, but he hadn't done extensively, so he focused on those. If all went well, he should be in the state the instructions regarded as optimally prepared. One of those involved raw perception, extending his senses not inward, but outward. Such exercises had been about communing with the natural world in the old days, but there wasn't a lot of natural world around these days, not in a city. Instead, he extended his focus outward, feeling the Lucrama of the people in the apartments around him. It was a grim experience, repeated encounters with desperation and poverty, but he pressed on. Strangely, there was a pulsating source of instability. When Rick focused on it exclusively, he discovered that it was closer than he had thought. He'd never felt anything quite like it, and had to wonder if it could be a threat, either a pending attack or something left behind to track them. Setting aside the exercise entirely, Rick devoted himself to tracking down the instability and almost immediately found the source.
Hmm?
Melissa looked up at him from her lotus position on the bed.
Something wrong?
Not unless that's intentional. You're feeling okay?
Oh, this isn't my condition flaring up. I'm in control of it.
She gave him a smile and cupped her hands in front of her stomach. Immediately, he felt the instability again, though now he realized that it was a flickering, like a flame. Within her lucrima, yes, but also within her hands.
This is all I'm doing, see? Just something I'm trying for fun. Unless you think I shouldn't?
With anyone else, I'd say it's a bad idea, but I think you know yourself better, and you still seem stable, so I have no problem with it.
Thanks, Rick. My LE teacher is always getting after me for bad lucrima form, but this feels a lot more comfortable to me.
Wait. Rick sat down on the bed beside her and locked her gaze with his. Are you being completely honest with me, Melissa? If you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but I don't believe you're doing this randomly. She stared back at him for a while, then sighed.
Yeah, sorry. It's not that I wanted to lie to you or that it's a big secret, just...
His sister lowered her head so that her hair partially covered her face.
When the birthrighter attacked, I felt... I mean, it's not like I didn't know I was vulnerable, but I didn't like being in that position.
Unable to find words to help her, Rick hesitantly touched her back. She didn't move away and instead shuffled over to lean against him, so he just rubbed her back.
Honestly, it made me really angry. I know you're just going to fight Mike in a formal challenge, but I wish you could beat the shit out of all three of them. I wish I could. I know that isn't possible to gain that much power that quickly, but there are other assholes out there. I want to be ready.
Though the idea of his little sister fighting made him a bit uncomfortable, he couldn't deny the anger she felt. I think I understand some of what you mean. If you want ideas about getting started with combat lucors, I can make some suggestions.
Thanks. Really, I mean it.
Melissa let her body relax a little more, but still didn't look at him.
For now, I've been focusing on the void inside me, letting the flame shrink and grow. At first, it was simple tests, because I didn't want to accidentally hurt you or any of my friends. But now...
She finally looked up, eyes uncertain.
I want to hurt him. Is that wrong?
I don't think so. Rick was no moral exemplar and felt strange answering such a question. Who was he to give her an answer like that? But he saw the pain in her eyes and couldn't leave her question unanswered. Can I see what you were doing before this?
Oh, sure.
A moment later, he felt her lucrima shift. He had become used to the feeling of an ether void within her, so it was surprising when it disappeared. No, it shrank to nearly nothing. When his eyes widened, Melissa smiled and expanded the flame again. Wow, it really does seem like you have it under control.
Before, it was always burning me. But thanks to what you taught me, well, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I feel a lot better this way.
And you were trying to find a way to weaponize it? Melissa looked away shyly.
Yeah, I guess. I figured that if it could help your foundation and it hurt my classmate, maybe I can do even more with it.
I think it would be good to talk to more experts, Rick said. But I think it's fine. I've paid a lot of attention to your lucrima over the years, and it feels healthier than it's ever been.
If that's true, could you teach me how to use it more effectively?
I'm honestly not sure. Both if he had the knowledge to teach her and if it was a good idea. Now that he understood her intent, her technique actually tickled something in the back of his mind. Many elements were completely unfamiliar to him, but perhaps... Before the conversation could go further, he heard a notification tone from his phone. Normally, he would have ignored it, but they could both use a bit of a break. When he checked the notification, to his surprise, it was from their uncle. Melissa noticed that it had drawn his full attention and perked up.
What is it? Not something bad.
For once? No. He stood up and smiled. It's Uncle Frank. He wants to video chat.
Oh, great.
Melissa pushed past him to fire up their laptop. Soon they were waiting for the program to load, crowding together so they would both be seen in the cheap webcam. The computer took longer than usual, as if taunting them for being eager, before everything loaded and the connection finally came through. Richard, Melissa. Uncle Frank looked very glad to see them, pretending to hug the camera. When he sat back, he looked healthy, but a bit worn. Not only had he clearly been working in dirty conditions, Rick thought that he might have a few recently healed injuries.
It's always wonderful to see the two of you. God, I know I always say this, but you're growing up so fast.
What's the occasion, Uncle Frank?
Melissa leaned forward, peering at his image.
You're not getting into anything dangerous, are you?
No more than the job description. Don't you worry. No, I actually wanted to call to apologize. It doesn't look like I'm going to get back to the States this year at all, which means I'm going to miss your graduation, Melissa.
Oh, gosh, you don't need to apologize for that. It's not like it's that big a deal.
Their uncle shook his head.
It'd be better if you had family supporting you. I hate to say it, but you're not likely to get many people from your local family.
I'll have one.
Melissa wrapped one arm around Rick's neck and shook him a bit.
Seriously, Uncle Frank, we're just glad to talk to you. You don't have to worry about being away with work.
Rick nodded in agreement. You said you wouldn't get back this year. Does that mean you might have a chance to visit next year?
That's right.
Uncle Frank nodded, a big smile on his face.
We're getting close to a big discovery. I'm sure of it. After that, I'll definitely be due for some rest and relaxation. Can't think of any better way to spend it than with my favorite niece and nephew.
It would be a long time before he arrived, long enough that it would be completely irrelevant to all Rick's present problems, but he was still encouraged to hear the news. He was glad to hear that he'd get a chance to spend some time with his favorite uncle again, and wondered how different things might be now that he was much more experienced with Lucrema souls. Well, unless the difference was that he was injured or dead. That thought aside, they had a good time doing nothing but chatting and catching up on various events. Rick decided not to go into more detail about his problems than he already had. His uncle knew most of it and had given him enough advice. If Uncle Frank had been nearby, Rick definitely would have depended on him, but for now, he didn't want to risk his uncle abandoning important work to come and deal with problems like this. Eventually, with the sunlight ebbing on his end, Uncle Frank sighed.
As much fun as this has been, you two, I think I need to go soon.
Thanks for taking the time, though.
Melissa beamed at him.
I'll consider this an early graduation present.
That's very sweet, but your present should be the actual gift I sent.
Abruptly, their uncle's expression darkened.
You did receive it, didn't you? There was some money, a few things I thought Melissa would like, and some useful medication for you too, Rick. Did you get them?
Rick and Melissa looked at each other. His sister was completely confused, but Rick was slowly coming to a painful realization. He swallowed and spoke.
When was it supposed to arrive? Should have been around this time. I wanted to time it to be the same day that I called you, but the call got delayed by a couple days, so I assumed you already had the package. While I have internet, I guess I should check the tracking again, because last I checked it was en route. What address did you send it to? I used the private family channel, since the contents were valuable.
There was a split second of their uncle cursing before he cut his mic. After venting his anger with several words Rick could almost lip-read, Uncle Frank turned the mic on again.
I'm guessing that one of my brothers changed the private channel to redirect to their address instead. Most likely.
Rick ran his hands through his hair in frustration, trying to think back over the documents he'd signed before the birthright corps.
Had they talked about this? Damn it, I should have checked for this. Of course they'd be able to change it after our parents died. No, don't blame yourself. These things happen.
Melissa did her best to smile, though he could see the anger in her eyes.
It's the thought that counts, Uncle Frank. Honestly, I'm really glad you were thinking of us.
I wish I could be there more for both of you. But I'm proud of you. You've done so well despite facing so much.
They spoke for a little while longer, dragging out their goodbyes, but Rick had trouble focusing. The pleasant warmth of spending time with his favorite family members was gone now, and anger over what had happened rose within him. As soon as the call was over, he was going to visit the rest of his family. Chapter 42, A Family Visit. As the bus headed to the suburbs of Branton, Rick tried to get his anger under control. Not to suppress it, just make sure that he used it instead of the other way around. The idea that Uncle Frank's gift had been stolen by the rest of their family was infuriating, but there was only so much he could do. Technically, he had their phone numbers, but he decided not to call them. If things had gone the way he suspected, then it would be better not to give them any warning. He was fairly certain that the person behind it would be Uncle Alan. After all, he had been the one to go after Rick's parents' birthright cores. Had his uncle done this in retaliation for losing them, or just to try to steal whatever he could? Presumably there would be answers soon. When Rick got off at the last stop, he was still some distance from his family's neighborhood. Though part of him wanted to sprint, Rick made himself walk to stay focused. Whenever the package had arrived, it had been long enough ago that a few extra minutes would make no difference either way. What mattered was that he arrived in a clear state of mind. Average suburbs gave way to the trailer parks. He felt a brief flicker of nostalgia for the first of them, still the same after all these years. The people in this neighborhood were all right, and a few even nodded to him, as if they vaguely recognized him. None of them were rich, but many had painted their trailers, set up flowers, actually worked on the broken cars nearby, and generally still kept trying. As he walked further, he reached his family's old neighborhood. These trailers were poorly maintained and rusting, TV antennas the closest anyone came to ornamentation. He stepped off the main road onto a dirt one littered with trash and broken glass. A few people sat outside, drinking shirtless and just staring at him, but he ignored them. Finally, he was within sight of his uncle's trailer. He and several other relatives had pushed all their trailers together for some long past reason that didn't matter anymore. Even the same dog was there, a mangy creature tied to a post. When he approached, it both whimpered and snarled. Rick walked up to knock on the door, but at that moment, several of his cousins slouched around the sides of the trailers. They looked unkempt, but it was an organized movement. All of them were burning with lucrum as well, making it obvious where Uncle Frank's gift had gone.
"We figured you'd come, Dick,"
one of his cousins taunted him, but Rick ignored him, just looking around at those approaching. Three of his cousins moving in front of him, an aunt and two more cousins now approaching from behind to surround him. Not thinking about them as family, Rick just counted lucrum generation rates. Area lucrum analysis. Opponent A, 12,500. Opponent B, 18,000. Opponent C, 11,000. Opponent D, 27,750. Opponent E, 14,000. Opponent F, 19,250.
"What's the matter, Dick?"
A cousin from behind punched at his shoulder, a mockery of the friendly gesture. Rick let the blow bounce off.
"Not going to greet your family?"
"You know why I'm here." Not letting them cow him, Rick turned slowly in a circle, looking at all of them. Yes, they knew. "You stole Uncle Frank's gift." His aunt smacked her lips.
"And it tasted good, boy. Thanks to him, we all ate well, and we have the strength to win a few more brawls. You can't take that away from us, so what are you gonna do?"
"There should have been more. A letter and objects without value. Please give them to me, and I'll walk away." The tallest of his cousins, about his age, with 18,000 lucrum, laughed and stepped up to him.
"You're going to walk away no matter what, Dick. Make it easy on yourself and just do it now."
When Rick didn't back down, he stepped up so they were eye to eye.
"Don't be stupid. We've been spoiling for a fight and we're packing 100,000 lucrum between us."
"No, you're not." What Emily had told him about the limitations of generation rate had never been more obvious to him than in that moment. Over the course of their lives, his family had possessed hundreds of thousands of lucrum. But what had they done with it? They'd let it all run through them like water, spending it on small luxuries. A few of them had cores, but most of them just pooled the lucrum inside their lucruma until they spent it.
"Are you high, Dick?"
His aunt came closer, smirking at him.
"You went off and acted like you were better than everyone, but what have you made of yourself? Still working at that shitty little gym?"
Rick closed his eyes and took a deep breath. "Please give me whatever is left of Uncle Frank's gift. This is the last time I'm asking."
"Oh, he's asking, boys, because he learned fancy manners in the—"
She cut off as Rick reached back and grabbed her by the head with his left hand. Though his aunt had the strength to resist him, she was taken entirely off guard by the abrupt movement. Before she could recover, he pulled her directly into his elbow as he slammed it into her face. His aunt dropped like a stone, and everyone else stared in shock. Given that she'd held slightly more lucrum than he did, she should have been able to fight him for a long time. But none of that lucrum had been packed into an effective core, rendering her nearly defenseless to his strike, honed by combat in the underground. It hadn't even been a fight. And his aunt had been the strongest of them, which was why he'd taken her out first. There were still five of them surrounding him, but that wasn't enough. One of his cousins let out a yell and struck at him from behind. Predictable. Rick stepped back toward him so his cousin's fist sailed past his head harmlessly, then struck his cousin on the head without even looking. Again, he dropped in a single blow. Three of the remaining four lunged at him, striking from all sides. Rick simply braced himself to endure the clumsy blows. Compared to the attacks he'd received from so many in the arena, much less Mike and his cronies, these were nothing. With attacks coming from all sides, his efforts to land another decisive blow didn't get through, but he just needed to wait for his moment. Eventually, one of his cousins tried to kick him in the crotch. Rick grabbed her leg in one hand and jerked her off her feet, swinging her directly toward the remaining three. One managed to dodge, but the other two went down, tumbling into the dirt. The last rose, thinking he'd dodged, but Rick was already there, grabbing him by the front of the shirt. It took surprisingly little strength to fling him to the side, his cousin smashing into one of the trailers so hard that it rocked on its foundations. That left all but one of them down, and though some were conscious, they didn't look like they were going to get up to challenge him again. What had the last of them been doing? Rick turned to find his tallest cousin grinning savagely as aura rose around him. It was built to create explosive spheres, but what had he been doing all this time? Gradually, Rick realized that it had actually taken him this long to gather his aura and prepare for an attack.
"You're gonna regret this, Dick."
His cousin smirked and raised his hands to either side, beginning to gather aura spheres.
"I'll blast you to—"
Rick used a bunion step to cross the distance between them in an instant. Before his cousin even realized that he had moved, Rick grabbed both of his wrists. The aura burned, but it was practically tickling compared to what he was used to. His cousin flinched in shock as he caught up to the movement, his smirk gone. Rick hadn't intended to smirk back, yet he found himself grinning savagely. Panicking, his cousin dropped his aura and tried to struggle away. Using his wrists, Rick pulled his cousin closer and slammed their foreheads together. His cousin went down hard and lay groaning in the dirt. After confirming that none of them were coming after him again, Rick stepped over his cousins and reached the door to the main trailer. It was locked, but he snapped the cheap lock and tore open the door. He entered cautiously, not letting his easy victory get to his head. Though Rick had defeated his Uncle Alan before, his uncle was still more dangerous than all the others put together, thanks to his fighting experience and developed cores. There wasn't much space in the trailer home for an ambush, but he needed to be prepared. Yet almost immediately he realized that there would be no ambush. His uncle sat in a recliner that looked brand new, eyes bleary and unfocused. Judging from the spoon and syringe on the table, he hadn't invested the money. When Rick approached him, his uncle flinched.
"Boy, you gotta understand, things are rough here.
So you spent what you stole on drugs and a new chair?"
As Rick stared at him, his anger faded. Not only did his uncle feel weak and drained, his generation rate had declined to just under 30,000. Clearly the Aura Leech had not been kind to him.
"Richard, Rick, we just wanted—"
"Shut up."
Rick looked around the filthy home for anything that might remain. "Is there anything left?" Uncle Alan refused to meet his gaze. Of course the money was long gone, and it felt like his aunt and cousins had absorbed all the lucrum that had been sent. But there should still have been the gift for Melissa. Surely they couldn't have pawned it so quickly, especially because Uncle Frank would have sent something of more personal value. Abruptly, he saw them. Several glass figurines lay broken on the floor. Rick bent down and picked the pieces up, turning them over in his hands. He didn't recognize the figures, but based on the robes, they must have been Asian grandmasters. The quality of the work was amazing, exactly the sort of thing Melissa would have loved. She would have known who they were, even broken like this.
"Why?"
Anger gone, Rick looked up at his uncle.
"What could you possibly gain by breaking them?"
"No, it was an accident."
Uncle Alan shook his head blearily, then reached for the syringe. Before he could reach it, Rick grabbed him by the neck and slammed him back into his chair.
That isn't good enough. If there's something else and you didn't tell me, you'll regret it.
Rick had never threatened someone like that in his life, much less expected it to work. Yet to his surprise, his uncle flinched and shivered, and not from withdrawal.
Please, there was some plant. Weird Lucrum shit. I ate one of them and I almost died. Others are in the kitchen.
Dropping his uncle back into the chair, Rick looked toward the small area they called a kitchen. Yes, there was a box there that looked too good for the house. Before moving to it, he glared back at his uncle.
Pick up every one of the glass pieces and put them back in their box, unless you already destroyed the box too somehow.
When Rick approached the box in the kitchen, he was afraid that it would be empty, but he found that his uncle had told the truth. The interior was spaced into four different sections, each of which had held a dried black root. Rick didn't recognize them, but his uncle had implied that they were for Lucrum development. One of the roots was gone, but he still had three. That would have to be enough. Turning back, Rick discovered that his order had been obeyed. Uncle Alan fumbled the glass pieces a few times, but put them all into a box. It still had a few shreds of tape and wrapping paper, remnants of the gift from Melissa that it should have been.
Thank you.
Rick spoke the words as coldly as he could and was gratified when his uncle flinched.
You are going to change the family channel to redirect to my apartment. When I check tomorrow, it better be done.
With that, he took both boxes and walked out the door. No one moved to stop him. Chapter 43. Researching a Solution. Though tracking down Granny Whitney wasn't easy, she was predictable when it came to managing fights in the underground. It had taken Rick some time to set things up properly, but he did some of his training at the underground instead of at home, and eventually he got lucky. He spotted her getting involved with another match and eventually figured out her interest. A woman in her late 30s who had a generation rate of well over 150,000 lucrum. Perhaps she was Granny Whitney's cruiserweight candidate then. The match itself was intense, and Rick almost got sucked into watching it, but he recalled his purpose at the end. When the two women met after the match, he followed them, preparing for his chance. Rick noted, with only a little bitterness, that Granny Whitney didn't seem to be handicapping her newest candidate, and in fact seemed very helpful. There was tension between them, though, so he tried not to make judgments about the exact situation. In the end, what mattered was getting a chance to talk to the old woman. He fell in beside her when she tried to slip out of the underground. So, is that our cruiserweight?
That she is, dearie.
But Granny Whitney didn't smile as much as usual, a hard light in her eyes.
It's wonderful to talk to you, my dear boy, but I'm afraid that I really have a great deal to do. Just focus on training until the event, won't you?
That was exactly what I wanted to talk about. I've been pouring most of my strength into getting rid of the aura leeches, but I've picked up a lot of baggage along the way. There's a nearly 6,000 lucrum gap between my portfolio and my generation rate.
Well, you've become a bit more sophisticated about such things. Never fear, dearie. Granny Whitney will take care of that.
Wouldn't this be the time to try to purify those problems? I understand the methods can take a week or more to work.
The size of the gap actually bothered him, since it reminded him of the rest of his family and their inefficiencies. Yet Granny Whitney didn't seem to care, just shaking her head.
Purifying all of that is both difficult and expensive. There is a simpler solution, a medicine that will briefly bring out your full potential. I intend to give it to you just before the match.
Rick nodded in understanding, swallowing his disappointment. Perhaps that had been too much to hope then. He'd known that Granny Whitney didn't care about his development, just wanted to use it, but he still slipped up and forgot sometimes. Her solution to the problem was best from her perspective, but useless for his challenge against Mike.
Is that all, dearie?
She sped up, trying to leave him behind in the corridors.
I really must be going.
One more thing. If you wanted to really hurt someone in a single blow, how would you do it?
That brought her up short, and she turned back to him, eyes twinkling merrily.
Don't ask questions if you don't want to know the answer, dearie.
But when he didn't back down from her gaze, she shrugged and went on.
Your question isn't really about me, of course, and you couldn't use most of the techniques I would. Frankly, that isn't a very good objective for the match.
This isn't for the match. Rick folded his arms and stepped into her path so she couldn't move away. Answer this last question and I'll leave you alone.
All right, dearie, all right. Settle down. If I were you... What you want to do is find your enemy when they're weak, then strike not to cause physical damage, but to push your aura directly into their lucrimous soul. If you choose the right location, they'll be feeling it for a very long time. Look up what they call the Dantian in the East.
Abruptly, she reached up and patted his cheek.
You're a smart boy. You'll figure out the rest. Have fun, dearie.
With that, she slipped past him and vanished. When Rick started to move, he found that his entire body had locked up. It faded after several seconds, but he realized that she had somehow disrupted him when she patted his cheek. That was frustrating, but at least she'd given him the answer to his question. Since he hadn't expected a full answer, that was acceptable. Rick glanced at the time and left the underground to visit the library again. If Heather was on staff at this time, she'd probably be able to teach him what he needed to know. He didn't need to develop a brand new technique, just understand enough for one good blow. As he headed to the library, however, he found himself disappointed that Granny Whitney wasn't going to give him purification medicine. He'd looked it up online and found that it was absurdly expensive. It would have been worth it to recover the large amount of strength lost in impurities and inefficiencies, but even if he saved everything he earned in the last month and spent it all on one dose of the medicine, he'd only be able to afford substandard purification. Given his circumstances, better to keep slowly improving his strength with Philosopher's Elixir. He thought about it, but couldn't come up with any real solution. It was a difficult problem, and he realized that there might simply be no good solution. His life didn't have many of those. Perhaps all he could do was leverage the resources he had and make as much progress as he could. The roots his uncle had sent him were potent, but nothing magical that would transform his life. Using them to charge his training, he'd increased his generation rate by over 1,000 lucrum, yet almost all of it had gone directly into getting rid of the larger aura leech. Even focusing on it, he'd only managed to get the debt down to 549. He was going to have to accept that the last leech would stay with him because there was no way he could make enough progress to get rid of it as well. There would be no dramatic transformation there. If he wanted a qualitative difference before the fight, he needed to take more drastic steps. Hopefully, the library would help him get a bit closer to another one of those. When he entered the library, he asked around after Heather and was pointed toward the computers. She was helping someone get a document printed and looked utterly bored, but when she saw him, she grinned. Rick nodded to her and headed back toward the lucrum section, and she caught up to him before he arrived.
Hey, it's you again. Fucking A. I hope you have more interesting questions for me than basic computer problems.
Rick nodded. Yes, are there any lucrum techniques that let you update printer drivers? She punched him in the arm, not lightly.
Don't even fucking joke like that. Seriously, what's your question this time?
Someone I work with told me that I should look up information about Dantians.
Oh, sure. I can get you some books right away.
Heather got the door opened and led him into the lucrum section, moving randomly but finding books in the end, as usual.
Kind of an odd research topic, though. They're really not part of modern lucrum theory, and I didn't take you for the type to be interested in historical curiosities.
Really? Rick frowned. He was no expert, but he didn't think it was purely historical. I thought it was still a part of certain lucrum arts. People still believe in them, right?
People believe in a lot of things. Tell me, what do you know about Dantians?
Well, they're body parts that supposedly gather and collect lucrum. I'm unclear on if there's one, three, or more.
Typically people say three. One in your head, one in your chest, and one just below your navel. And it's true that those parts are critical to your lucrima, so an injury there is serious.
Heather stopped with a book in hand, using it to point at him.
But think about it. That's your brain, your heart, and your gut. How could those areas not be important to the process?
Having no expertise on the subject, Rick could only shrug and accept what she said. As it happens, I'm most concerned about injuries there.
Sure, I can find you some resources about that. Just because some writers were a bit off base about this sort of thing doesn't mean they were spouting nonsense. I haven't actually looked too deep into this myself, but I can get you started.
Before long, Heather had a small stack of books for him and took them to a small desk hidden away in the archives. She'd finished her job, but she stayed and slipped down into the chair opposite him. As he began looking through the books, she leaned forward, giving him a curious look.
What's this about, anyway?
Since he didn't intend to tell her the truth, Rick had a lie ready. My sister has been sick her entire life. Do you know anything about ether voids?
Only a little.
Heather sat back and considered him seriously.
I don't think you're going to find an answer here about that. If somebody told you that her dantian is broken or something, they have the wrong idea.
No, I understand her condition. At least I understand a little. I'm just trying to understand more about these sorts of injuries in the abstract. Heather grinned and nodded.
Yeah, I know about just needing to sate curiosity sometimes. Actually, I read one of these. Just a sec, let me find the right page.
She grabbed one of the books and began flipping through it, still speaking.
You might learn some interesting things, but I hope you don't try anything here with your sister. Letting Lucrum flow into her would help her condition, but if you tried to insert it straight into the void, that would be bad for her.
Though he latched onto that statement, Rick kept himself from looking too eager. Instead, he waited until Heather found the page she wanted and slapped the book down on the table. It appeared to be a diagram of the body, Lucrum flowing in various passages. However, instead of focusing on the three points she'd emphasized, the central core of the line seemed to be a spot between the heart and the stomach.
Okay, this guy was practically thrown out as a fraud in some places, but he was right about a few things. The core of most people's soul, if you're okay with calling it that, is right here. There's no organ there or anything, but it's the point where all the flows come together in most people.
And? What about it?
Most likely your sister was born with it, but if it happened because of an injury, it'd be right here. So yeah, if you want to learn more about it, keep reading about this stuff.
Got it. Thanks, Heather.
No problem.
She beamed at him and seemed to want to linger, but instead sighed.
Welp, I gotta get back to the old fucking grind. You bring any questions you have, okay?
He agreed and smiled at her as she left, then began to read the books. Though he didn't have time to read all of them, he didn't need to. It might be interesting to learn more about the theory behind Melissa's condition, but he suspected that she herself might be a better source of information. From what he'd read, a lot of ancient sources were based around finding universal truths about Lucrima, which led to flattening natural human differences. In any case, Rick was interested in causing injuries, not healing them. Combining what he learned from Granny Whitney and from these sources gave him the final pieces he needed. It would take him a while to work out the details, but he thought it was possible. A blow to the chest that would ram aura straight into the heart of the opponent's Lucrima. Just surviving the match against Mike wouldn't be enough, since another challenge could easily follow. No, he needed to end it decisively. Since it was impossible for him to gain so much strength to dominate the match, what he needed to do was focus on one strike at the end. This one would leave Mike with an injury that would make him hesitate to ever attack Rick's family again. And that would be the end of it. Hopefully.
Chapter 44. Sibling Technique. Without fights in the underground to occupy his schedule, Rick should have felt more free overall. Instead, he found himself entirely consumed with preparations, not just for the coming multi-tier tournament, but for the confrontation with Mike after it. Nearly every waking moment he wasn't at work, he was training for the inevitable, or at least thinking about it. He had never trained this hard in his life. Lisa warned him that he was dangerously close to overtraining, which would actually begin to reverse his progress if he kept forcing it. The body wasn't made to work constantly, needing time to repair itself, and the soul wasn't made to meditate constantly. Without substance to meditate on, it could quickly become useless, or worse. But for now, he pushed on. Most likely, he would need to spend a while resting and reflecting after this, but he would be grateful just for the opportunity. If he didn't make it through, there would be no rest at all. To put off overtraining as long as possible, he alternated between three exercises: expanding his lucrum via Philosopher's Elixir, doing exercises to prepare for the Death's Bane, and developing his new finishing technique. The first was limited by his paychecks, since he wasn't willing to put Melissa at risk, and he'd done enough of the second for the day, so at the moment he was focused on the third. There wasn't time to develop it to the point where he could use it as a primary combat technique, but he thought he was close to making it functional. If anything, the problem would not be finishing the technique, but finishing it and finding the result underwhelming. He'd likely only have one chance to strike. An idea slid into his mind, and Rick found himself considering something new. He glanced over his shoulder where Melissa sat at the little table, doing her best to glue the figurines back together. They would never be anything like they were meant to be, of course, but she seemed to find it calming to place the pieces back into their proper formation. She'd already repaired one of the figures, a robed woman who was heavily cracked, but still recognizable. "Are all the pieces there?" He leaned down over her shoulder, watching her work. Melissa gave him a brief smile before gesturing with the pieces she was holding.
"I've got all the big pieces, but I'm missing some chips. Those chips are actually the biggest problem, since it's easy to misjudge and glue them wrong. That can be a real pain."
As she continued working, she glanced back up at him.
"Anyway, what's up? You're way too focused to just amble over to chat."
"You mean I can't want to take a break with my dearest sister?"
"Nope. It's in one of the clauses of the super serious training guy contract or something."
Rick sighed. "Am I really getting that bad?"
"You're fine. I'm just teasing you."
Melissa stopped working and set down the glass figurine to look at him.
"I mean, if you were like this all the time from now on, I wouldn't like it. But I understand why you need to work so hard. If there was ever a time to go overboard, this is it."
Yes, she would understand more than anyone else, having been drawn in herself. Remembering that made Rick get over his discomfort with asking what he'd been thinking. "You remember that exercise you did where you drained my foundation to make it more efficient?"
"Sure, but I thought that wasn't helping anymore."
"What I need is for you to combine that with the offensive technique you were working on earlier."
"Huh?"
Though Melissa gave him an odd look, as he began to demonstrate what he intended, she quickly caught on. Much sooner than he expected, she managed to manifest what he'd hoped. She cupped her hands in front of her, an invisible flame burning within. While she worked on that, Rick formed spare lucrum into a shell similar to her own. It wouldn't serve to contain the flame in the same way, and he didn't think anything would keep the flame in its place in the center. That was a problem that he hoped he could solve, however, and the important thing was to test the concept.
"Okay, so,"
Melissa extended her cupped hands toward him.
"Now I try to hand it off, I guess? How can I put it into the sphere thing without burning through the side?"
"This is lucrum, not physical matter. You should be able to pass through." Due to her inexperience, the flame did deal some damage, but Rick managed to accept it from her. He rebuilt the sphere around the flame and tried to pin it in place with aura pressure. All his instincts screamed to push the whole thing away from himself, that it was dangerous, yet he suppressed those and kept trying. If he could sustain it inside himself in a balanced way. Without warning, the flames licked the side of the sphere and his lucrum began to burn away. Rick let out a cry and dropped to one knee, grabbing the side of the table. Before much could burn, Melissa reached out a hand and the void flame snuffed out immediately.
"Gosh, I'm sorry. Should I have made a smaller one?"
"No, you did fine." Rick took a deep breath and got back to his feet. "I was the one who screwed it up. Next time, I'll do better, though I don't know if I want to try again just now."
"We're not going to try again at all unless you explain what you're trying here."
Melissa put her hands on his shoulders, making him look at her.
"I'm just coming to grips with my condition, Rick. If I end up hurting you with it, that's going to... well, it'd really mess me up."
He considered in silence for a moment, then decided that there was no harm in explaining one of his core plans. In fact, given that his plan now included her, it would be downright foolish not to. "If we do this right, the one you'll hurt will be Mike."
"Ooh, do tell."
Melissa moved away from the little table, vaulted over the couch, and patted the seat beside her.
"Tell me everything."
"Basically, I think we should assume that the match won't be fair. If Mike is winning, he'll do as much damage to me as he can. But if I gain the advantage, he'll call it off. Maybe not right away, since he has an ego, but he can just give up before I can get back at him, then try again later." Rick sat down and smiled at his sister.
So before he does, I need to hit him with something he'll remember. Melissa gave him a vicious smile.
I like the sound of that. I'd love to do it myself, but it's obvious that I can't actually harm someone with developed Lucrum defenses. Not right now. You think you can use my skill somehow?
I can't use it, but I can carry these void flames you create. At least I think I can. What matters is that I've been working on a technique to do aura damage to someone's Lucrima. I was planning to use my own aura, but using yours would be much more effective.
Wow, so you'd punch the flame into him? That sounds like it'd hurt a lot.
His sister sat back, smile softening.
I really like that idea, Rick. I mean, I'd prefer for us to take out Glenn, but since Mike is the one ultimately responsible, I'll settle for that.
Maybe you can hit Glenn yourself someday. Encouraging his sister to get into a feud with a powerful Birthrider was probably not a good big brother move, but he liked seeing her so optimistic. The two of them worked together on the basics of the technique. Though Rick realized he'd need a lot more time to safely carry one of his sister's void flames, it was easier with her helping directly. Even if successful, the result would basically be a bomb inside him that she could explode whenever she wanted, but he had no concerns about making himself vulnerable to her. Eventually, it grew late, and Melissa said she needed to get working on homework she'd been putting off. It was just as well, because it was getting close to his appointment with Emily. Rick headed out to the recluse's retreat. Though they couldn't meet often because she was busy with work, he and Emily had set up a training schedule. Emily's defensive corps had much more Lucrum than his, but it was actually rated lower, so she could learn from him. It was a fairly equitable agreement, so he was glad that she wasn't just pitying him. In return, she helped polish his offense. Her aura blades were incredibly sharp, and he was still in awe of how much force she could put into a blow. Even if he couldn't attain that level, he could make his offensive skills less lackluster. Their relative weaknesses made the training mutually beneficial, so he was always glad when she had time. Usually, when he arrived at the recluse's retreat, the guard waved him through. But this time, the man stepped into his path.
"I'm sorry, sir, but only clients and their guests are allowed inside."
"Come on," Rick said. "Don't you recognize me by now? I work with Emily."
"And she didn't say anything about a guest today. I'm afraid you'll have to wait, sir."
That was frustrating, and it implied worse possibilities, but he wasn't going to get in a fight with the retreat staff. Rick stepped back and shuffled his feet while he waited, wondering what the problem could be. As conscientious as Emily was, he didn't believe that she could have simply forgotten. She also wasn't the type to simply snub him, so he was left with grim possibilities. At last, he saw Emily approach, her usually stern expression more serious than normal. Instead of waving him in, she left the retreat. Without saying a word, she jerked her head down the street, so he followed her. They walked out of earshot before she glanced to him.
"Did you get a message from Whitney?"
"What? No." Emily sighed.
"I was afraid of that. I'm not sure if she expects you to run, but she doesn't give you the same respect she gives the rest of us."
"So she told you something. What?"
"There are signs that one of her rivals is trying to target her chosen fighters. Outside of the underground, just whenever he gets the chance. As such, she's going to take all of us early. In about a week, we'll all be taken 3 days early, kept under lock and key until it's time for the event."
"Huh." Rick considered that revelation. He didn't like the idea of Granny Whitney kidnapping him, since that was likely what would happen, but he also didn't like the idea of hitmen coming after him, much less coming to his apartment and targeting Melissa. "So that changes things."
"It's very inconvenient for me, but I can't afford to fight her on this. I need to work this whole week to prepare, so I'm afraid our training is canceled for now."
Emily stopped walking and turned to him.
"But then we're going to be stuck together for 3 days while we wait for the event. I'll prepare some final exercises for you, and I expect you to do the same."
If all the fighters would be forced together before the event, then his schedule had just gotten rearranged. Hopefully it would still work, but... "I'll prepare some defensive exercises so you don't waste your time, but I don't know how much time I'll have for yours. I'm likely to be injured for much of that time." Emily raised an eyebrow at him, but didn't ask questions.
"Fair enough. I'll see you there, Rick. Don't take any unnecessary risks."
With that, she turned and walked away. From her, That was practically a warm farewell. Rick stared after her for a moment before realizing he had no time to space out. He had almost no time at all. Soon he would be facing three major threats in succession, and he could only hope that his preparations had been enough. Chapter 45. Granny Whitney's Team. When the day arrived for him to be kidnapped, Rick was ready. Melissa had argued that she should come along, that it might be safer for her to be with him, but he had refused. It might have been nice to have her with him, and he respected her desire to see the fights, but he didn't want her to be in the same room with Granny Whitney, ever. Even if it was just instinct or unjustified paranoia, he wanted to be careful. So Melissa had gone to stay with a friend for a while. Once he was gone, he'd text her, presuming that he'd be allowed to do that. In any case, he waited alone as he felt Lucrim concentrate outside his apartment. There was a knock on the door. Rick picked up his backpack with all his things in it and walked out. Unsurprisingly, Granny Whitney stood at the door. She looked mildly irritated to see him prepared, but covered it with a warm smile.
I see someone warned you, dearie.
I agreed to fight in this match for you, Rick said, and I'm not going back on my commitment. Besides, if your rival is really targeting your fighters, I'm safer wherever you're taking me.
You're a very reasonable young man.
Her next smile looked authentic, though that didn't make it comforting.
And for the record, I have no plans to imprison you or anything of the sort. We're merely all taking a little retreat together to make sure there aren't any last-second surprises from anyone.
As she stepped away from the door, Rick looked beyond her, wondering how she had arrived. Soon he got his answer as Granny Whitney pulled a pair of car keys from her handbag and lifted them before her, Lucrim pulsing through them. Aura slid between the different elements of the keychain, powering the external lucors there. The power quickly multiplied, arcs of lightning showering through the air by the balcony. The arcs grew concrete, forming a shape that floated there, like a bird opening its wings to fly. Rick had seen Lucrim vehicles before, but never one this intense, so he watched curiously as it manifested. As a car. A little blue economy car, just floating in the air beside his apartment.
Get in, dearie.
Granny Whitney hopped over the railing easily, sailing toward the car. The door and upper part split open to allow her to enter, and she landed on the seat with her purse in her lap. Rick followed more slowly, a bit disoriented by the whole thing. He wasn't exactly concerned about the gap, since the fall wouldn't really hurt him, but he wasn't used to throwing himself over the railing. But since keeping her waiting might go poorly for him, he forced himself to jump into the car, which opened to swallow him as well. Then he found himself floating in the air, in what felt like a very ordinary vehicle. It was more spacious than a normal car, and the seats were much nicer quality, but otherwise it was bizarrely ordinary. There was no steering wheel, of course, and the dash had a few pictures of children, a stuffed sheep, and a pair of knitting needles. Humming to herself, Granny Whitney set her keys into the ignition,